I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. Sleep. It is that thing that can make you or break you when you first become a parent. Before you even have a child, in fact, you're told to get sleep while you can. And then in those first few weeks and months, it can feel like such an uphill battle, can't it? To get enough sleep and work around the times that your baby sleeps, or, as often the case, doesn't sleep. My guests today are experts in all of this, Eve Squires and Gemma Fryer. They're sisters, and together they run Calm and Bright Sleep Support, which is a lifeline for so many parents facing sleep challenges with their children. We had a brilliant chat about the extreme approaches to sleep coaching, finding that way that works for you, and lots more. Ladies, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you here today. We're recording this just after the Easter weekend, aren't we? And I don't know about you two, but my whole household is on a bit of a come down from a sugar-filled frenzy of a weekend. How about you guys?
Yeah, we're post-COVID and post-house move. I thought it would be a good idea to move house with COVID, and my poor sister was up helping. So yeah, it's all been a bit higgledy-piggledy here. But as ever, we just on we go.
And winging it, as ever. Aren't we all just winging it a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, tell you what, moving house post-COVID does not sound like fun, Eve.
No, I tested positive on day two of move, and I was thinking, gosh, this furniture is really heavy. feeling a little bit snappy and a bit worn out. But I thought, well, it's just the move. But no, it wasn't. It was the lovely vid. But we're all good. I can't complain. We've got it all at the same time. So there's positives always, aren't there?
I love the affectionate terms that we have for COVID. Like, it was the vid. And I've heard people saying, like, you know, the Rona, and it's like, and obviously it's not belittling how serious this is for a lot of people and has been for a lot of people, but I think that we almost like look for like little ways to, I guess, use humour to cope with situations, don't we?
Definitely.
Absolutely. It's such a lovely, such a lovely tool, isn't it? When things are tricky for us, certainly we try to laugh through a lot of things, otherwise we'd cry.
Yes. So Gemma, how about you? So, I mean, remind me, you've got, So your sisters, for anyone who doesn't know. And have you got eight kids between you?
We have. So yes. I have four. My youngest is 8 months. My eldest is 11. And Eve has four too. I mean, seriously, it's a lot of children.
That's a lot of kids, So you've got an 8-month-old, Gemma.
Yes. Yeah. Posey's 8 months now. It just very much
that's
in the
still
thick
like
of
properly
it.
In the thick of it, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
In the early days, when we wrote our book, I was actually pregnant with Posey. And so much of the things that I spoke about the third trimester, the fourth trimester, I was kind of living through it as we wrote it, which was really lovely because I really felt in tune with everything. Because I think you forget sometimes, don't you, with each baby, you almost forget each age and stage. So it's been lovely actually to be in it. And she's just a dream. She's a very precious little babe.
And Eve, what are the age ranges of your kids now?
So Ted is my youngest. He's 7 in 2 days. And my eldest Tilly is 13. And she was the one who, for anyone that knows my story, I had in the back of the car at 10 months old, not far from Posey's age now. And it was she who I crashed my car with because I was so tired. So she's actually the first sort of CMB babe. And since the day that I did the sleep teaching with her that I kind of made up because I didn't like the horrible, harsh ones, she's probably had less than 10 broken nights sleep in her life. So she's a really great poster kid for it.
So tell us a bit more about that then. So yeah, so you were a sort of newish mum, had, you know, at your wit's end with in terms of like sleep, you know, broken night sleep, and you were driving along with your 8-month, 9-month-old in
the back of the car. 10-month-old baby, and I was feeding her every sort of 2 hours night and day because I'd believed at the time that you just did everything on demand, which I still believe. But that doing on demand, despite her beautiful Michelin man thighs for any 80s or 90s babies with all the huge rolls and chunks, she was still feeding, and I believed through hunger and need, but in fact, she didn't need it. Her body was showing me, and I could not continue with the exhaustion. I crashed my car because I now know what it does to the brain and body, sleep deprivation. And that was it. I just got home and thought, this can't be the only way. I'm not safe. I'm not safe physically and I'm not safe mentally.
Yeah, that must have been absolutely terrifying.
It really was. And whilst it wasn't a serious car crash, it really made me feel, hold on, I'm not sure this is what it's meant to be about. Mm. It's supposed to be, you know, people kept telling me, enjoy these early fleeting years, you know, you never get it back. Just like what you touched on, I saw your recent post. And I thought, well, if they're so important, don't I need to be present for them? Don't I need to not be feeling really resentful and bitter? And I was willing the days to pass only to be met with another night where I was surviving on seriously what I now know to be dangerous levels of sleep deprivation. Because when we've had even less than 7 hours a night consistently, which must be millions of parents around the world, we are more impaired than drink and drugs combined. So it really does impact us massively.
And that's why when we speak to parents, we say, you know, it feels difficult and exhausting because it is difficult and exhausting. And of course, babies are programmed to wake through the night in the early months. We don't actually recommend doing any active sleep teaching before 6 months. But it's also important to talk about how difficult it is, because even though we're all doing it, we talk a lot about this badge of honor. Eve describes it beautifully about how we wear this badge of honor that we're just supposed to be okay with this. But actually, it's really hard. And I think talking about it really helps.
It does. It's tricky though, isn't it? I mean, and you talk in the book about how there's a lot of guilt tied in with the reasons that a lot of parents don't tackle sleep issues for a long time. But then equally, sometimes when you do talk about it, you might get kind of, you know, a bit of judgment or a bit of shaming, like whether it's from, you know, somebody on Facebook, like a Facebook friend, or whether it's from one of the other mums. Even last night, I had some comment on Facebook, on Instagram, someone, it wasn't to do with sleep, but it was just general mum shaming. It was someone saying, you chose to have kids.
Oh my gosh.
And all you do is complain about them. And maybe if you did something that they wanted to do rather than force them to do what you want to do. And I was like, oh, I'm such a bad mom. And then I was like, no, hang on, come on. But there's so much of that around, isn't there? That kind of like emotion around the decisions that we're making with our kids.
There is.
It's so loaded. And it's really important to say, it's not just one way. It's not just that there is judgment for people who choose to sleep, train or teach, as we prefer to call it. It's also judgment the other way around. Like you say, well, if you're tired, why don't you just sort it out? So the judgment and the guilt tripping goes both ways. And we do this thing called cognitive dissonance, where whatever view we have, we really have to believe that it's right. So if we breastfeed, we have to believe that's the best option. If we sleep train, we must believe that that's right. So we have to have to put down the other group or the other view, because it makes us feel better and more at peace with what we've chosen.
Is that similar to, I've heard people talking about confirmation bias. Is that similar where you almost look for
proof and
that
evidence,
back up
yes.
what you think?
It's really similar, definitely in the same family. And we do it to feel better. But ultimately, if we could all just accept that there is no one right way to do it, and that we are not in the shoes of that parent who's made that decision, and if we could just respect that only we can make the decisions for our family about how we do sleep and parenting in general, I believe that we could have so much power in how we could support each other.
That's so true. That's so true. And, you know, sleep is one of those things that, you know, like you've said, it can really kind of make you or break you. And it's so divisive and everyone has a different opinion and there isn't one way of doing it. There isn't like a, you know, one size fits all. Now, even before you have a baby, like I'm sure, Gemma, you must have been thinking about this when you were pregnant quite recently, you know, with your youngest. People say things like, get sleep now while you can. Or then when you have the baby, it's like, sleep when the baby sleeps. Like, there are just so many opinions about sleep.
And it's lots of it is well-meaning advice, you know, from your mother-in-law, from your best friend, from people that just want to tell you about their story. I mean, it's like those horror birth stories, isn't it? Like, you don't want to hear that when you're about to enter into your journey, which, whilst it might be similar to someone else's, it is entirely your own. And you're totally right. I said there's so much conflicting information and also preconceived ideas, things that, you know, you have your ideas about how you want to do sleep feeding. And the reality is often somewhat different. And I think that can be really difficult for parents to navigate through, taking a different path when parenthood is all about riding those choppy waters, isn't it? And things being calm and then being difficult and that whole journey through it.
Yeah. And it can be really hard. Like you've said, it can be really hard when you're so tired to actually almost like see the wood for the trees. Yeah. Like you can't make sense of things. You can't decide what is a sensible way to, you know, you read so many, you might have, you know, be reading Mum's Net threads and, you know, looking at Instagram and reading different books and it's just overwhelming. Yeah.
And the comparison thing of what your friend is doing and, you know, we all get caught up in that comparison thing, especially when things are splashed across, you know, social media. So, yeah, it's so important that you can tune into what feels right for you and try and drown out any other noise, because your journey is your own journey. And I've learned so much in parenting my babies in, you know, very different ways, actually. The way I parent Posey is completely different to how I parented my eldest son. So we're just forever learning, but there's so much judgment and so much conflicting information. It can be hard to actually know what you want to do and to decide when, especially when you're exhausted, you know?
Yeah. There's just so much noise, like filtering that all that noise. Now, Eve, you said that you, after you had that car accident and you were like, right, something's got to change here, that you basically kind of created your own kind of sleep teaching, you know, formula, I guess, or like regime, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I guess the way that I sort of view things is that I feel like there are kind of two different approaches, like quite sort of polar opposites. You've got the kind of hardcore sleep training approach, which I think I kind of tried a version of with my eldest, which was very much like put the child in the bed, don't make eye contact, you know, back off, let them cry for like, I don't know, 45 seconds, go in, settle them, leave. Double the amount of time that you're leaving them for. And it was so kind of like regimented and like, okay, I need to do this. And it just felt awful and it felt terrible. But I was like, no, we need to do this. And then at the other end of the scale, there's the advice where it's like, just bring your baby or your child into bed with you. And neither of these approaches make sense to me as a mum or work for me. And it can be really hard to kind of think, well, is there an in between? Like, what's the right thing to do? So as a mum, with, you know, with a 10-month-old and you were like, something's got to change, how did you even begin to create something of your own?
So really, really good question. So I use this in my personal life as well. Okay, so I read this incredible book by this woman called Glennon Doyle called Untamed. And she said, I know, literally, I don't know if you know my personal story,
book.
But I left my 21-year relationship last year in May.
No, I didn't know that.
And I did that because I read the book and for years I hadn't been in a happy, healthy relationship. And I knew, but I didn't want to know. And the thing that got me the breakthrough is the same thing that got me the breakthrough in the sleep teaching, because she said, you don't have to know what you're going to do. All you have to know to justify change is not this. So if you know that this is not okay, that's enough to take steps. So in answer to your question, I knew that I absolutely did not want to do the brutal, what I perceived to be brutal, military, timed, regimented, strict, affectionless, rigid routine, which was brutal. However, what I was doing was brutal. what the wakes and the relentless exhaustion and the sleep deprivation to my brain, my body, my soul was ebbing away. That too was brutal. So I said to myself, right, what can I do that will not do what I did before, because that wasn't working. And my favorite phrase is, nothing changes if nothing changes. So I had to do something different, but I didn't want to do the 30, 40 minutes, shut the door, see you in the morning. Not, by the way, to say that's wrong, because I know several children who are now grown up who are the most attached, gorgeous, happy kids that did have that. So, but it wasn't for me, and neither was this completely feeding without questioning, not being objective, just doing it because I'd been told it was the right thing. It didn't feel right. So I came up with something that I perceived to be highly responsive, but saying through my actions, I love you and I will always come back and you will never have to figure this out on your own. But I believe in you enough to give you the tools to do this for yourself. Because ultimately, from the second that we cut that umbilical cord, our job, I believe, is to make them so secure and confident that they can one day drive off down that road in their first car or whatever to uni and look back and feel that they have the tools to navigate this world. That's our job. We're actually enabling separation gracefully and peacefully and dignified, you know, throughout. So that's the answer, is a middle ground for me. And it's not for everybody, but for me, and it seems for lots of other people, it feels good and feels right.
So what does that look like in terms of, you know, the actual practical side of things?
So it would be that instead of just doing these timed things where, oh, it's 5 minutes, I must go in, we have a level of crying that helps us to tune into what they're actually doing. So for example, let's say that you decided, and the timings don't really matter, Alison, that's the newsflash. If you decided 5 minutes was your time, but when you got to 5 minutes, they weren't actually that upset and they were kind of having a grumble or figuring it out or, you know, taking a breather, we would then ask you to hold back and hold off and let them see what they're doing. But we also give parents the tools that when they are really upset, regardless of the time, to go in and offer reassurance and to do that however it looks and feels for you. But it's ultimately, the biggest thing is not doing what has become the crux. So there's nothing wrong with feeding to sleep, but if your 10-month old baby needs, in inverted commas, to be fed back to sleep every, even more frequently than they did when they were a newborn, and they've got these lovely chubby thighs and they're eating really well, it gives you the confidence to not do that, but to offer comfort in other ways, which is up to you how.
Right. And you started offering this advice to other mums in your local area, is that right? And then you brought Gemma on board. So Gemma, you're a paediatric nurse, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. And when Eve started volunteering, she honestly got a reputation for herself as like the village crazy sleep lady. She would literally breastfeed Tilly, and then Tilly would go to sleep, and she would go out into parents' houses and help them with bedtime and then come home to her babies. And I would just think, I was like, love, it's amazing what you're doing. I was off in London nursing children. I've been doing that for 18 years. It was, you know, it was my vocation, my job. And Eve had been volunteering for 4 or 5 years. And then I had my second son, Louis, and I'd used the method with him. I didn't need to use it with my son, but I needed to use it with Louis, and it worked after 3 nights. And I did that when he was 7 months old. And I remember Eve was getting busier and busier because the demand was there and she was volunteering, and someone had said to her, like, you know, I would pay a lot of money for this. Like, you need to put these amazing skills into a business. And it didn't really sit well with you at first, Eve, did it? Because you were a bit like, I can't charge people for this. I didn't want it to be an exclusive thing. But Eve will talk about that in a minute. But when I came on board, I remember Eve calling me and saying, look, I need some help. You're on mat leave. Why don't you give it a go? And I said, I love what you're doing. It's amazing, but I'm not going to get the same job satisfaction that I get out of being a nurse and saving little babies. And she said, just do this one call, this one family, just see how you like it. And within a week, I was hooked. And I remember calling him on the phone in tears after supporting my first ever family. And I still remember their names and the age of their babies. And we're still in touch to this day. And I remember saying, oh my gosh, love, we are actually saving lives doing this, but in a different way. And that was, yeah, Louis 8 tomorrow. So I've been doing this for 8 years. And we have an incredible team of paediatric nurses, health visitors, and we have a clinical psychologist on our team. So we're all NHS professionals. And we help families across the globe, and we've been doing it for, over a decade if you add in all of Eve's work before that.
That's amazing. And it's interesting you say about the difference, that shift from volunteering to turning it into a business. Do you get much criticism from people, like perhaps health visitors or other paediatric nurses, who maybe disagree with your methods? Because as we've already discussed, there are so many different ways of doing this.
Yeah.
And perhaps they think that you're like playing on vulnerable new parents and trying to sell a dream to them that, isn't going to work.
Yeah, we don't get criticism from professional nurses. In fact, we get signposted from several GPs and nurses and health visitors to our services. But there absolutely is criticism and cynicism and very charged emotional criticism of people going, how can this be true? And yeah, we've had, because we have trolls now that we're a slightly bigger account, so we'll have people saying that, you're preying on vulnerable parents. And we're thinking, okay, well, vulnerable parents come to us and get a lot of free support and a lot of help, and we just let our reviews speak for ourselves. That there's like 97% excellent on Trustpilot, people saying these people have changed our lives, they've given us hours of free time and support. So there will always be people that will be against it, but what we find is usually, in fact I'd go as far as to say always, what's behind really fierce aggressive criticism is exhaustion and is deep fear that they really desperately want in on that sleep. But because of what they've heard, and there is a lot, Alison, there's a lot of misinformation out there, dangerous propaganda against sleep teaching, which we cover in the book. And so these people, it's not their fault. They have been subject. I was one of them. I believed that I would scar my baby for life and they would grow up to be, withdrawn and neglected, not able to form meaningful relationships if I did a bit of sleep teaching that was attended to. And so it's not their fault. So yes, we get it, but only when people don't have the full pick.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode of Not Another Mummy Podcast is brought to you by Gymmondo. I don't know about you, but between children, daily commitments and life admin, finding the time for working out is no walk in the park. What's more, gyms can be intimidating and they just don't work for everyone. So if gyms aren't your cup of tea, join the growing list of people cancelling their gym memberships in favour of working out at home with Gymmondo. Gymmondo is an online fitness and well-being platform with hundreds of 20 to 30 minute workouts and training programs ranging from HIIT and yoga to dance and meditation, plus over 1,000 healthy recipes. Aside from the freedom and flexibility Gymmondo offers, exercising at home is fun, saves you money, fits perfectly into your lifestyle, and helps you stick at your fitness goals. So start a 14-day free trial and save 50% on your annual membership by visiting gymmondo.com, that's gymondo.com, and entering the code MUMMYPODCAST.
So let's talk about that, because I found that really interesting, reading that in your book about the link between the children that were in Romanian orphanages between the 60s and the 80s, and the thinking around the psychological effects of sleep training. Can you chat a bit about that and, the effect that had on just the things that mums just accept as fact?
Right.
today.
Yeah, I think that's the single most important thing, Alison. So thank you so much for bringing that up, because the single biggest thing that stops parents doing sleep teaching across the globe is the innate fear that they will cause damage to their child. Now, show me a mum that would go, yeah, I don't mind about that. They might be emotionally imbalanced when they're older, but as long as I get sleep, you know, nobody. So nobody would advocate that. And what we have to remember is, in a civilized, democratic, respectful society as we live in, we're not going to have people professionally charging for something that's child abusive or neglectful. It's just not rational or reasonable to expect. Where it comes from is, as I talk about in the book, is 1990s Romania and basically a government policy that wanted women to have as many children as possible. They used to get an award if they had 10, for example, for the Brave Mother Award. And it was to create an army for power and money, etc. Classic old, you know, greed and power sort of motivations. And so as a result of that, there were hundreds of thousands of orphans throughout that country, and the families simply couldn't look after them emotionally or physically. And those children went through absolutely horrific, abhorrent circumstances. And I don't go into it too much, but ultimately deep physical, mental neglect, and not just neglect. So it's not just not feeding them or not clothing them or not keeping them warm, but it's also hosing them down with cold water. There was pneumonia. I mean, I could go on. They would leave their nappy soiled, and then lots of other horrific things. Now, unsurprisingly, as a result of that, there was deep psychological damage and physical damage. I mean, actual stunted growth physically as well, interestingly, the studies show, but also, you know, forming meaningful relationships and how they viewed the world, and just huge impact, unsurprisingly, on them because of the trauma they experienced in childhood. Now, that in itself exists, but what we must do is know that that is absolutely incomparable to a child who is not an orphan, who is fed, who is warm, who is loved, who is secure, going through sleep teaching for approximately 3 to 5 days, and they're not upset for all of the night or half the night or a quarter or an eighth or even a 16th of the night. And when they are upset, we're attending to them. So the argument that a baby only stops crying because their care, they learn that their carer will never come, is a heartbreaking concept called learned helplessness. That is not what is happening in sleep teaching at all. It's responded to. If they do get upset, that's okay, because we don't, if, for example, our child was in the backseat of a car and they didn't want to plug in and they were upset, we wouldn't go, don't worry, darling, I don't want you to be upset. So I'll drive around at 90 miles an hour, risk your life. But as long as you're not upset, that's not what we're here to do. We're here to give them what they need over what they want. So the arguments against sleep teaching are not relevant, and they're not, they need to be put into context.
Yeah. I mean, I find that absolutely fascinating and also reassuring, because it is that thing where you think, oh my goodness. Like, and you talk about this in the book as well. You talk about that, you know, there's so much of that kind of inbuilt instinct that, that mums have as well as dads, but mothers, we have this thing where if our child cries, it, you have an actual reaction to it, don't you? Like a bodily reaction.
I find this so fascinating. And like you said, Alison, we talk about this in the book, but we're programmed over centuries to respond, to rush in, to be there for our babies. And that's deeply programmed. And I think that is exacerbated depending on the childhood that you had. Yes, of course. And Eve and I were extremely lucky to be from a mother who was extremely attached, a social worker. We had all of our needs met. We're incredibly lucky. And we know that that isn't everybody's journey. But even in, you know, I have friends who, you know, did have incredibly happy childhoods and are still very anti-sleep teaching. And I think we have to consider, and we talk about this in the book, our journeys to motherhood, because that can have an impact, not only our childhoods, but our journeys to getting our babies. Did we go through a long journey to get them? Did they follow loss? I've experienced 4 baby losses on my motherhood journey over the last decade. And I know that my babies that followed loss, especially Posey, who was one of a twin, we lost her twin at 10 weeks. Our sleep journey has been completely different. I've only just stopped co-sleeping with her for that reason. So we have to consider that it might be that sleep teaching of any sort is not something that you're able to do, but we also have to talk about the truth that if you want to do it in a responsive way, there is a way to do that. And we're really proud of the way that we do that over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I asked some people on Instagram if they had any questions for you guys. Are you happy to for me to put a few questions to you?
We'd love to. We'd really love to. That's our favourite part, to be honest.
Of course. All of this preamble is just being a bit dull, but let's get to the good stuff. So this is one that I think a lot of people will be experiencing. So so this person said that she's got a 10-month-old who is a great napper, but keeps waking up between 4:30 and 5:30 a.m. and she doesn't know how to fix that, because that's hard, isn't it? When every morning you're waking up and it's like 4:30 a.m.
That's not even, we call an early wake anything after six. Because
hang on, an early wake is anything
after five and pre six. So if it's before 6 a.m., it's actually a night wake. So we would treat it as a night wake. So people say I'm having early starts, but they're not. It's actually a night wake. So it would need to be treated as such. So what we would do in that instance, the first place we'd look is the naps. So I know she says he naps well, but that, for example, from about 9-10 months of age, they begin to transition, to get ready at least to transition into one nap, which happens between 15 to 18 months. And what they want us to do then is to cap their first nap so that they then take that lovely long nap in the afternoon. So the first thing we do is look at naps, because even if they're good, they might not be at the right times. We need to have the sleep at the right time of day so that it can last them through. Because interestingly and quite weirdly, early wakes are almost down to overtiredness. So it's strange, like they get wired, they get an injection of cortisol and adrenaline in their blood and they wake up early. So we would want to look at day sleep. We'd want to look at whether that baby self settles, which is the absolute golden ticket to all sleep. And then we'd want to give them some steps to how to deal with that. So it would be not coming downstairs, for example. It would be not giving them any kind of payoff, like a bottle or a cuddle, unless of course they need it and they've had a bad dream. But in normal situations, it wouldn't be rewarding them waking up. So yeah, that they can almost always be fixed, you know, well, early wakes. It's not something that people have to struggle with.
I wish I'd known that, you know, 9 years ago when 5 a.m. was for years, it was just, that's just when we woke up. Okay, so the next question is transitioning from cot to bed. So Katie is saying that she needs to move her toddler from cot to bed and he is having none of it.
This is really hard, and it's actually a really common question that we get asked in our inbox every day, I think. And the best advice, and this is one of Eve's, which I love, is when you do the transition, obviously for Katie, this might be a little bit late, but there's so much we can do to help her. But when you're doing that transition for parents that are about to do it, try not to use the words, you mustn't get out of bed. You're in your new bed, don't get out, because you're almost giving them an idea in their mind when they probably weren't thinking about getting out at all, you know? And I use this with all of mine, because luckily mine came after Eve, so I've learned a whole lot from my big sister. But truthfully, if you're saying don't get out, you're in your lovely bed, don't get out, you know, you'll give it, it might not have even come to their minds to get out. So keeping it super chill, which is very much our approach, like we don't have one set time in our plans, which really surprises people, but keeping it chilled, doing the transition, helping them be part of the transition. So bedtime, choosing their bedding if they're getting new bedding, and just keeping it super chilled. But what is super important is keeping that loving boundary in place from the start. If that first night you get them into your bed or you take them downstairs, you're kind of setting a precedence for how it's going to look. So it's about putting boundaries in place, and you can do that in a really responsive way, which is what our toddler plans are all about.
Brilliant, brilliant. And then quite a few questions came in around 2 or 3 year olds waking every night, and this is something that we've had and we're still having with one of my 3-year-olds. So Nicola says, I've got a 2.5-year-old that wakes every night between 3 and 4 a.m. How do I make it stop? And Gillian said, my 3-year-old is still up every night, wanders around at around 12, 1 a.m. and then wants company, help.
Okay, so the single biggest bit of advice we could give anybody that has a sleep problem, whether they're 3 or 13 months, and whether it's a cuddle they get or a bottle or a co-sleep or a chat or a blanket pulled up, or in some people's cases, Calpol. Some people get into habits of giving Calpol, for example. Anything that they get to get to sleep or back to sleep is what they will come to wake for. So it's literally as simple as, if when they wake, they get X, fill in the gaps. If that continues, so long as the X remains, so long as the cuddle, the bottle, the hand holding, the song, the visit to your bed, the wake will remain. So the minute that that payoff is removed, that will stop. So it just takes 3 to 5 nights of you saying, no matter what happens, come hell or high water, I'm not doing the thing. And everyone will know, as I'm saying this, what that thing is. When that stops, it will stop. So we're literally talking, whilst I know everyone's going to go, oh, but if I don't do that, she's going to do that. She might wake up the other siblings. I can tell you exactly what will be said. But truly, the thought of waking up other siblings is far worse than the reality. It very often doesn't happen at all. You can put white noise on for the other siblings, for example. But we are literally talking. This is what we're talking. So what day are we today? It's Tuesday. So if people had something to overcome like that, I'm telling you now, by the next Tuesday, you could all be on those 12 hours. It is that simple.
So would you just cold turkey it? So whatever that thing is that they're waking for, you just don't give it to them and let them cry until they fall asleep?
No. So you would talk to them first. So anyone above 18 months, 12 months, you'd say, look, I believe in you. You're amazing. You don't need this bottle. Look how big you are. Look at those big wellies you've got. Look how you splashed in that puddle. Look at that picture you drew. I believe in you and I know that you can sleep without this. So when you wake in the night, we're not going to have a bottle because we don't need that now. So mummy's going to come back and reassure you, but we're not going to have that. And then you would stick to it. So it doesn't mean leaving them to it. It might mean going back and just not doing the thing. So let's say it's a bottle. You would go back and first of all, you'd be sure that they're properly upset. If they were just in bed going, oh, I want a bottle, I would be leaving them to it because they're not distressed. They're showing you they're okay. But the minute they're like upset or they come out, I'd go back and say, mummy loves you so much. I can't wait to go to the park in the morning. We're not going to have a bottle tonight. Sleep well, see you in the morning. And I'd have that on repeat as many times as you needed to offer reassurance. And it feels like a slog, but I guarantee you that if you stick to it, let's say you had a god-awful, Alison, 2 hours, God forbid, of awful upness, a horrific night. The very next night you do it, you're looking at an hour. And the very next night you're looking at 30 minutes. And by night four, night five, you're done and you'll go, why didn't I?
It's profound, isn't it? The changes are really significant. And also I talk about boundaries a lot on our page, but people are like, what are boundaries? What are loving boundaries? It's putting a boundary in place so that your baby feels safe with whatever responses you're giving them, be that feeding, so they're safe with that, or be it changing your approach. And they'll only test for as long as they need to, your babies, until they feel safe that those responses they're getting from you are the same, whatever that looks like. So the reason that we have nonverbal, we have lots of nonverbal putbacks, lots of emotional reassurance for babies of this age, toddlers of this age, it's really important, like Eve said. But people don't believe that it can be different when you're in it and when you're exhausted and you just do it to get by. And we've all done it. Eve and I have done it at different points in our journeys through motherhood. So it's about changing your responses and knowing that ultimately, as soon as they feel safe with what's happening, the testing will stop, the protest will stop, and it happens sooner than you think. It really does.
Yeah, you've reminded me, Gemma, actually. So I say to either choose, you can either choose short-term gain and long-term pain. So the short-term gain is you give it and you get sleep quicker in that moment, but it will exacerbate and it will continue. Or you choose a little bit of short-term difficulty and pain for the long-term gain. So that often helps people.
That really rings true. A few months ago, we were in this situation with one of my twins where she would wake up every night and my husband and I would alternate who would go to her each night. And when it was my nights to deal with her and to help her, I would just scoop her up out of her cot or out of her bed and take her down to the sofa and just lie with her all night. And that's totally what you're saying. That's like short term. I was like, I need sleep. I'm going to do what it takes to get sleep. But it wasn't the best thing for her long term to be doing.
And there's nothing wrong with that, Alison. So when we do the cut the corners and we do it not because we're lazy. We don't do it because we're trying to take the easy option. It's not easy to get up at 3 a.m. and go on the sofa. It's horrific. So let's not be hard on ourselves. We do it to survive. But if we could just go up and hover above the big picture and go, it's Tuesday, by next Tuesday, I can have this done. And we're doing this for our family. Then you find them, and I've got goosebumps now, and I always get goosebumps when, you know, it's the pure truth. You find that energy. And, you know, one of the arguments against it is, but I'm already knackered. How can I choose to be more knackered for a week? And I'm going, it's a week. And then you won't be knackered.
You can do a week. You know? Yeah. You can do a week. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love what you guys say about golden time with like toddlers and preschoolers, that giving them like 10, 20 minutes of one-on-one dedicated time every day can make a huge difference to their sleep patterns.
It's so important because, you know, our toddlers are, their worlds are opening up around them, especially after COVID. Some of these babies that have been born in lockdown, they're starting nursery settings, or, you know, their worlds are opening up. They're like little sponges. So it's so important to meet that emotional need. And it's not a case of you stop meeting needs when you sleep teach. Of course you don't. But by having that golden time and almost ticking that box, you know that you've given them that time without your phone, without any distractions. And that's super important. And with any separation anxiety, it's just about reconnecting. And initiating cuddles, initiating contact. And that's my top tip for any separation anxiety, and it will start to ease.
Yeah. We had another question, which I think a lot of people will identify with, which is toddlers and preschools getting into parents' bed. So we had one question, which was, how can I get my 3-year-old twins out of my bed? Their cots are just ornamental now. And then Lynn said that her 5-year-old every night comes into her bed and she lets him stay because she's a full-time teacher. And I guess by that she means she has to get a good night's sleep. It's not an option for her. Should she be bringing him back to his own bed or just allowing him to sleep in her bed?
So there's no shoulds. So if him getting into her bed means she gets sleep, he gets sleep, she's happy with it, he's happy with it, he's rested, his immunity's good, she feels like she's close to her partner if she has one, she feels like she's getting her work done, don't change it. My hunch would be he's probably not as rested as he could be. Maybe he is. So does it work for you? So there are no shoulds. So no, she shouldn't put him back in his bed. But if she wants to, and she believes that everyone will be happier, then yeah, she could. So there's no shoulds. That's really important.
What if he's quite happy getting into her bed, but she's a bit like, oh, for whatever reason, she thinks, actually, I'd be a bit happier if you were back in your own bed. Is that a valid reason to make that change?
1,000,000,000%. We cannot look at this, the oxygen mask again. We must put our oxygen mask on the plane first before we attend to others. And I personally could not survive more than a week of broken sleep. And when we say broken sleep, by the way, if in those first 5 hours, this is really critical, actually. So the first 5 hours of sleep are when we wash away our Alzheimer's proteins, our immunity builds, we do our emotional filing. So say someone was rude to us that day, we'll go, well, maybe they're having a bad time at home. So we basically make at peace with everything. And if in those first 5 hours that sleep is broken, even by 5 minutes, this is the point, even by 30 seconds, the point is we're pulled out of our sleep cycling. And that is really damaging. So I'm sure you can empathize, Alison, but if you're woken up in the first 3 to 5 hours, I don't know about you, but I'm literally like, I'm confused. I've got sleep and I'm in a fog and I feel sick. And then I can't get back to sleep either. So broken sleep, just him getting into her bed is enough to justify, yes, that it's not okay. And that those changes could be done. If she's a teacher, I'd recommend she picks a holiday to do it, by the way. Mm. Yeah.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. And then preparing for school, Joe has said that her 4-year-old needs a nap most days, or is she says, or he's a total shit.
I love that, Joe. Love you, Joe.
how can she prepare him for school in September, basically?
So I always say to not worry about it until it happens. So this summer holidays, enjoy naps in the daytime, have a wonderful summer without worrying about it. Every single 4-year-old or most 4-year-olds start school and they adjust, and she can do early bedtimes whilst her son adjusts, and at weekends he can take a nap. So it's all about being completely child-led, doing what works for you and not worrying too much, because often the thought of the doing is so much worse than the actually doing. So it will be fine and he will adjust, absolutely.
Yeah, and if she turns up, they're all shattered, by the way, for the first year.
They are.
They're all shattered. If she turns up, I try to use food as a weapon. So I will turn up when they're in reception with good snacks, literally at school. So that
you can't take a snack. You can't. You're picking them up from reception.
I know.
You've got to have snacks.
Mike, if I turn up with snacks, my kids just look at me like, what were you thinking? So yeah, turn up with snacks. And then that gives you an hour of wind, as it were. I would do a literally 4:30 dinner. And then that'll give you the wind, and then you've got the bath and bed. If they're going to sleep at 6:30, it's fine. It's not too early when they're just adjusting. And you will get there, truly. And some children, my Ted had an appetite. He was five at weekends and stuff. They're all different. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not weak. Sleep is for the strong anyway. So superpower.
Brilliant, brilliant. Listen, Eve and Gemma, thank you so much for being wonderful guests today. It has been so wonderful. Your advice is like gold dust. And bless I'm really you. Grateful that you've shared some of it with us today. Your book, Love to Sleep, is available to buy now. But where can we find you online? Because you do share a lot of nuggets of sleep joy, don't you, online?
Yes, you can find us over at Calm and Bright Sleep Support on Instagram. We do lots of lives on there. We post lots of reels with free advice. We're also on Facebook. But come and say hello and tell us your story. We love to hear from people. We do much more listening than we do talking. So come and say hello and we would love to see if we can help you. And thanks so much for having us as well, Aslan. It's been great.
It's been so good. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much. Bless you. You take care.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.